We talk a little bit about what the shared government looks like, shared governance, with Harry Nisco, who is the House GOP leader, joins us on our Newsmaker line this morning. Representative Nisco, welcome back. How are you?
I'm good, Scott. How are you doing? Thanks for having me.
So I was disappointed to see the outcome of the election, mostly just
and the
because
hits just keep on coming.
Just the the attention that had been paid to that race, the recent vote, obviously, where the House Democrats voted in unison to say we don't want to protect girls' sports. I thought that might be enough. Obviously not. What's your reaction to what happened and the results?
Yeah, well, I'm disappointed too, but it was a pretty blue seat. It was an uphill battle for our side. We did put a lot of effort, good team effort into it. It was actually pretty high turnout compared to other special elections, but like you said, at the end of the day, the Democrats were able to stick together and hold that seat. They did have to spend over $100,000 on that seat in order to hold it, regardless, we end up still with a Republican speaker for 2 years, a Republican fraud committee, and really a strong position to at least block some of the craziness that we've seen from the Democrats here in the last 2 years.
All right. So interesting. I thought the turnout was low, but it was help me on the turnout. It was typical or low for a general election, but high for a special election then?
Yeah, it was low. It would be low compared to a general election, but when you look at other special legislative elections, it was actually pretty historically high levels on both sides. And obviously, Democrat turnout machine in that blue district, they had to turn the money on. They had to turn on the machine. We forced them to spend some resources on it, and they were, they were able to turn out a pretty large number of voters in that district.
All right, that makes sense. And you did give us a few silver linings. So obviously, let's just quick refresher. When the House was tied as a result of what happened with the fraud in that particular election, the Democrats were doing nothing. They wouldn't show up. They wouldn't do their job. And thankfully, there was enough political pressure that they had to show up. And then they sat down and figured out a power sharing agreement. So you now at least operate on that going forward. Tell us what that looks like. How does that work?
Well, what that looks like is that we have the speakership. That's a Republican speaker. We also have a majority on a fraud oversight committee that's going to get to look at some of the fraud in the governor's office, in the state administration, and what we can do to fix that. And then on other committees, starting Monday, when the new member is sworn in, we're going to be having equal numbers, Republicans and Democrats on committees and co-chairs, where we're passing the gavel back and forth. And that's a part of that model is what we were looking at when we were looking at a potential tie after the election. But obviously, we no longer are in a situation where we have co-speakers, and we also are no longer in a situation where we don't have a Republican fraud committee. That's an achievement that we got as a result of, the pressure people put on Democrats to show up for work when they were refusing to show up for work, as a result of that Democrat being removed or not allowed to take office when he was ineligible to hold the office because he lied about where he lived.
Yeah, great point. And so when you have a even number of Republicans, Democrats on committees, and a Democrat, I don't know what it is, hex, because no Democrat evidently feels like they're vulnerable in any district. They just vote in block, totally like masters to their leadership. And that's what we saw in the Protection of Girls Sports Act. Do you expect a lot of gridlock out of the committees?
On policy issues, yeah, there is going to be quite a bit of gridlock. There are a few, non-controversial issues, policy issues where you will have some ability to move across party lines. But for the most part, controversial policy issues aren't going to pass. And that was, likely to be the case regardless. We have a Democrat governor. We still have a Democrat majority in the Senate. And none of that, was really up for a vote in this election at all. The best we could do is get to either a tie or a small Republican majority. And in either case, we knew we were going to have to work across party lines. We're going to have to work across party lines to get our budget done, and that's the big task in front of us. We're going to have to come to some sort of an agreement on our budget for this next two-year cycle, and then also think about what we need to do long-term to solve the fact that we went from an $18.5 billion surplus, the largest surplus in Minnesota history, to now what looks like a $6 billion deficit in the next budget cycle, all, you know, because of Democrat overspending, overregulation, and growth of government. And that's the big problem we have to figure out some solution for. At least, you know, we'll put a Band-Aid on that solution this year, and hopefully the people of Minnesota will, you know, go in a different direction in 2026 so we can really start to fix these problems.
Well, the solution, according to Tim Walz, is get a new president, because I think I heard him blame the deficit on Donald Trump. What did you make of that excuse?
Well, all the Minnesota Democrats, you know, TDS has turned from, you know, into a Trump deflection strategy. Everything that they did wrong, every problem that they've created, they want to find some way to blame it on Donald Trump. And I think Minnesotans are going to see through that. Minnesotans are too smart to think that spending an entire $18.5 billion surplus and turning that into a $6 billion deficit, that's not the fault of anything that's happening in Washington. That's the fault of overspending and overregulation in St. Paul.
I see today that Walz is holding a press conference to discuss, listen to this, President Trump's dismantling of the Department of Education, and talking about how it will slash resources for most vulnerable students, career training programs, and pathways to higher education. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I think he's peddling disinformation again. And, he has his national political aspirations, as we all know. I wish he would focus more on what's happening here in Minnesota as a result of his policies. But the truth of the matter from the Department of Education perspective is they're going to continue to send the federal funds that that Congress has appropriated. The bigger concern I have in terms of our federal education funds is whether we're going to lose federal education funds as a result of their refusal to follow Title IX and continue to allow biological boys to play in girls' sports. That's the threat that we've heard from Washington, that they're actually going to enforce Title IX against states like Minnesota if we don't comply. And Tim Walz, Keith Ellison, and all the Minnesota Democrats are so tied up in the idea of gender identity that they want to that they're going to defy that and risk our federal funding. I think that's a bigger concern.
We're talking with the House GOP Majority Leader Harry Niska for a couple more minutes on what's on your mind today. You mentioned earlier the fraud committee that will exist in the shared governments going forward in the House. What do you want to happen from that, Representative Niska?
Well, every week we're going to be having hearings on focusing on different areas of fraud. I think it's important that somebody in the state government finally starts to take that seriously, and that's what Republicans in the House are committed to doing. The last 6 years of the Walz administration, we've seen a culture of corruption, of noncompliance, of turning the other way as you know, fraudsters and criminals pilfer our state coffers, and it's time that someone finally shines a light on that in state government. There's been some federal law enforcement activity, but the Walz administration and Minnesota Democrats have turned a blind eye. They want to say they are serious about it now, but when we've brought forward bills to try to deal with that up until now, a lot of those have been voted down on party line votes. Hopefully they will be guilted into actually doing something about it now, but that's one of the main purposes of this fraud committee, is to continue to shine a light on those issues.
And just quick recap on the sheer volume of fraud that we know about now.
Well, it's hundreds of millions of dollars, and it's, you know, it's that's only the tip of the iceberg. It's only what we have found out about from federal investigations or from the Office of Legislative Auditor when it goes and looks at particular departments. It's just the tip of the iceberg, but, you know, Minnesota is the state that had the largest COVID-era pandemic fraud, the Feeding Our Future fraud, where they just handed money to you know, nonprofits pretending to provide meals to kids, where you could just drive around the block and see that nothing was happening at those sites. But Minnesota government never did it. They just continued to shovel money out the door because they were afraid, you know, of being called names or being questioned or anything like that.
It's a mess. A complete and total mess.